Well, now we're going to move. So far this morning, we've talked a lot about real micro scale absorption and bioavailability. Now we're going to move to a macro scale bioavailability, and that is taking and linking the sorption characteristics of an insecticide that's taken up by a plant and then eaten by sucking insects to see what sorption characteristics will affect how well those insects are controlled. So imidacloprid is a neonicotinoid pesticide. It has a fairly high solubility, 0.51 grams per liter. It's soil applied, and then it's transported in the xylem of plants, where then it can be taken up by sucking insects and kill the insects so that you don't have any crop loss. Typically, application rates for neonicotinoids and imidacloprid are fairly small. In this case, 0.28 to 0.56 kilograms per hectare. So vine mealybug is an invasive pest in California. It first appeared in the Coachella Valley down in Southern California about 1994. By 1998, it had moved into the Central Valley, and now it's pretty much in all viticulture areas within California. The vine mealybug is really hard to take care of and to eradicate because it either lives in the soil where it hatches, and then it comes up through actually under the bark of the grapevine, moves its way up through the vine, and then when you have really high infestations, it can eventually begin to appear within the actual grape bunches. And the problem with this is that if you have just one grape bunch from your vineyard have vine mealybug, then it can reduce the price you get for all of your grapes, especially table grapes, if they're going to be exported to other countries. So it's a big issue right now within California viticulture, and they have a lot of problems controlling it because most contact insecticides, as it would indicate, you have to have contact with the bug. Well, they grow underneath the bark, and if you can see in this picture here, that the bark has actually been peeled away to show the vine mealybug. So if you can't get the insecticide in contact with the insect, then you can't control it. So an experiment was to be conducted trying to use these the neonicotinoid imidacloprid to control the vine mealybug. They went out, they had a whole year's worth of trials, and they had no control. So they couldn't figure out what the problem was. So they decided to do a more in-depth study. So we found near Bakersfield three sites, and these are all on growers' farms. So there's Caliente 1, Caliente 2, and Garcia. Those are the three sites we found. Imidacloprid was applied to these sites on between the 5th and the 15th of April in 2010. The plots had 60 individual grapevines. They were three rows wide by 20 vines long. And after application, they're about every 2 weeks, they would go out and they would actually try and count how many vine mealybug they could find, all the way from April through August. So here are the sites. You can see here the Caliente 1, Caliente 2, and the Garcia. One thing to understand with this study is it was done on actual growers' fields. And one of the things you'll see later is that is a problem in that if we're not controlling the vine mealybug, they lose their yield. So at some point during we could only allow our experiment to go for about 6 to 10 weeks. And at that point, we had to then go out with a rescue rescue insecticide to make sure we didn't lower their yield and cause problems with their harvest. So here's some characteristics of the soil. The big thing to look at here is organic carbon content in clay. The fact that organic carbon content, they're all very low in organic carbon, and the clays, they were, the soils had very little clay in them. They're very sandy soils. So imidacloprid was applied 562.6 grams per hectare equivalent. And if you look here, the irrigation systems that they used actually went, they were subsurface buried, and they go right down. You can see a little bit of them have come up here. They go right along the grapes. So for us to apply the imidacloprid, the best way for us to do it would be to do it as a chemigation. So we actually installed a series of extra micro-irrigation tubes all around the vines that we were treating that we could then inject the imidacloprid into to apply to the soil around. The drip line, we injected imidacloprid at a ratio of 100 to 1 into the water supply. And then the tissues were sampled between April and August every 2 weeks. And if you look right here, you can see here's a trunk plug where they go out and they would actually just take a plug out of the trunk and then use that to analyze for imidacloprid concentration actually within the grape. We'd also take petioles and leaf blades. The problem with this is initially we thought we'd be able to extract the imidacloprid and just use typical analytical techniques to see how much was in the plant. But we couldn't take enough plant to extract enough imidacloprid to detect. So we found an ELISA assay to analyze for imidacloprid actually in the plant. So the tissue samples were brought back to the lab and they were stored at minus 80 C until they were ready for extraction. Imidacloprid was extracted, so we took the samples immediately from the minus 80 freezer, put them in a tube with the extractant solution, and allowed the extractant solution to warm up the plant material, and then we would be able to extract from that. Samples were extracted and then transferred into 96 well plates that had, it was a commercially available ELISA technique where you would take, you'd put the extract in, the imidacloprid would interact with the antibodies that were actually in the on the plate on the wells. You'd wash those off, you'd then wash off the antibodies, and then you would put something else back on for any place that hadn't reacted that would fluoresce, that we could then look at and actually quantify how much imidacloprid was in the plant sample. And the sensitivity was about one part per billion. And the biggest advantage with this was you could use a very small plant sample to get your concentrations. So, concurrent to that, we ran some soil sorption experiments where we took samples of the soils from all the from the three locations nearby but that had not been treated with imidacloprid. We conducted sorption experiments using a 0.025, 0.125, 0.25, 0.5, 0.5, and 1 milligram per liter solution concentrations mixed with, so 20 mils of that solution mixed with 5 grams of soil, equilibrated for 24 hours at 20 degrees C, centrifuged, and then the supernatant was removed for analysis. In addition, we looked at two sequential desorption events from the sorbed soils. To do that, the 10 mils that we'd removed from the supernatant that we analyzed for imidacloprid, we then added 10 mils of imidacloprid-free water back to the tubes, shook for another 24 hours, again, centrifuged, extracted the water, and then we repeated a second desorption. To clean up the samples, we used Waters Oasis HLB solid phase extraction cartridges. We preconditioned the cartridges with 4 mils of dichloromethane, followed by 4 mils of methanol, then 5 mils of nanopure water. We loaded those with 10 mils of the supernatant, rinsed twice with nanopure water, and then dried them for 15 minutes. To elute them, we eluted them with 3 mils of methanol, followed by 3 mils of dichloromethane, evaporated that to dryness, and then reconstituted in 1 mil of 80-20 water acetonitrile. And then we transferred those to HPLC vials. Following the second desorption event, we also wanted to get complete mass balance, so we removed an additional 5 mils of supernatant, added 15 mils of 50-50 acetonitrile and methanol, equilibrated that for 24 hours at 20 degrees C, and then centrifuged. Removed the 10 mils of the supernatant, evaporated that to dryness, and then reconstituted it in 1 mil of 80-20 water acetonitrile. Transferred to HPLC vials for HPLC analysis. HPLC analysis was conducted. We used 20 microliter injections. We used an isocratic mobile phase with 2080 acetonitrile in water. The flow was 3/4 of a mil per minute, and we used a photodiode array detector to at 270 nanometers to analyze for the imidacloprid. So, some data. First off, these are the vine mealybug densities in the untreated plots. So here you can see right here, the vine mealybug got really high. The what we call the rescue treatment, where we went in with another insecticide that we knew would work and applied it right in between these two sampling dates. So you can see that the vine mealybug was getting a high population. It was going to start to cause damage, so we went in and rescued. So you can see we, in the Caliente 2, we still didn't have any vine mealybug, had made it to that location. So then, these are the treatments that we had. And again, you can see that in the Garcia soil and the Caliente 1 soil, we really didn't have, we had some treatment, but we had some effectiveness of the imidacloprid, but by the time where we had to go into the rescue treatment, we were getting to the point where we had insect populations high enough that it was going to start to cause damage and reduction to the yield for the grower. So some of the soil desorption isotherms. First, the Caliente 1 soil. And this is the soil that had the highest clay content, but kind of the middle organic carbon content. It had adsorption KD, and the sorption isotherms were all linear, so we didn't use the Freundlich, we went with the linear KD. And you can see here that it had a KD of about 1.4, which isn't real high, so it's leachable. But and this would in essence be, as you applied the compound to the soil, that's what sorbed on. So that kind of held it. And then these further desorption events would be, with further irrigations, what would be available for the plant to then take up. And as you can see, that as time goes with successive desorptions, we get hysteresis and the KD actually increases. In the Caliente 2 soil, which has lower clay content, you can see that the adsorption is actually quite low, 0.75 for a KD. The desorptions, again, get higher, but you can see that here you'd have a situation where this imidacloprid would be very susceptible to leaching. And again, in the Garcia soil, the same thing, about the same KDs for both adsorption and desorption. So if we look at comparing those different soils with the, and these imidacloprid numbers here are in essence the numbers that were kind of the average of what was in the plant. So you can see that with this KD of about 1.4, we actually had imidacloprid in the plant. This was the Caliente 1 was the only location where we actually saw enough imidacloprid in the grapevine to get effective treatment against vine mealybug. Both the Caliente 2 and Garcia soils didn't have enough imidacloprid to have treatment. And you can see that there's a like a twofold difference between the adsorption or the adsorption coefficients for the two soils. And it, for the most part, it looks like it's related to clay. So if you have a high enough clay content, you can hold the imidacloprid in the location long enough that the plant can then take it up. So here you can see the imidacloprid concentration as with time within the actual plant. These are the titers in ppbs for the Autumn Royale 1, and this Autumn Royale 1 is in essence the Caliente 1. This is the Garcia, and this is the Caliente 2. And you can see that, in essence, indeed we have a increase in imidacloprid concentration within the grapevine, because the imidacloprid can stay in the root zone so that the plant can take it up. These others have, in essence, been leached out. And then here are the three different plant parts. So this was the plugs in the trunk, where it has the highest concentration. And then from the petioles and the leaves, we have very little imidacloprid up in the petioles and the leaves for the Garcia and the Caliente 2. The Caliente 1 has enough imidacloprid that you can get control both in the beneath the bark where the plant, where the insects like to grow, and out near the grapes where it's really important that you can control the insects so it doesn't get into the grapes. So in conclusion, the imidacloprid sorption wasn't related to organic matter in the soils at all. That it showed no relationship. It was the sorption was more related to clay content of the soils. The soil with the highest clay content had the highest imidacloprid content at the end of the growing season as well. We measured at the end of the growing season how much imidacloprid was left in the soil, and in essence, the Garcia soil, it was below detection limit. We couldn't detect any imidacloprid at the end of the growing season. And the only one that had enough to really maintain insect control was the Caliente 1. And the grapevines with the highest imidacloprid concentration, again, grew on the soils with the highest KD. Low soil sorption resulted in imidacloprid loss from the root zone where the plant could take it up. And in the future, the focus of how especially systemic insecticides are developed and marketed should look at optimizing application rates that facilitate plant uptake, not just simply if they could actually maximize, because in the case of these soils, all the imidacloprid that was lost to the plant was in essence deep leached, where in a typical way that they would determine how to come up with application rates, they would just simply up the application rate because they thought they didn't have control. Whereas in this case, it'd be more a matter of figuring out maybe a slow release where you could allow it to be closer to the root zone, be slowly released so that the plant can take it up. With that, thank you, and I'll take any questions. Well, they're not applying very much, because if you know the area of California, they don't have a lot of water. So they're only irrigating where the root zone is. So in essence, I don't have the water data, because again, we worked with a farmer. We're still waiting for him to give us his water data. But I would imagine that based on typical application rates, he may be applied 2 feet of water.
The triple or
micro sprayers. It probably was driven down below the root zone, because they have to also maintain a leaching fraction, because they have enough salt that they're pushing a leaching fraction of about 10%.
Question: did you look at enhanced degradation of the compound? The reach rate was kind of high. I mean, it's not like hugely high, but it is pretty high.
The which?
Enhanced degradation of your compound?
No, we didn't look at that. This was a thing where, in essence, an entomologist came to me and said, I don't get any control, why not? I said, well, we can look and see if it's your soil characteristics. So we started looking at the...
What's the history? How many times has this compound been applied to that soil?
It hadn't.
This is the first time ever?
Yeah, they hadn't been using imidacloprid for grape production in this area before. I don't remember the name of the compound they're using right now, but the compound they're using for control, they're starting to develop resistance. So the vine mealybug is becoming more and more resistant. They're having to up their rates. So they're looking for a better opportunity or a better option so that they don't have to, so they don't lose control. So the compound that was the rescue application, that was the one that works now, but they have to go in increasingly higher rates because they're starting to build up resistance.
I forgot the structure of the metoclopramide, but was it non? Are you sure it was non-ionic, or was it charged with the pH of the soil?
Let's see. I'll show you that. It. Get back to where you can see the. Yeah, probably was. It was probably charged.
So that was what was attracted to the clay.
Yeah.
Do you know what the mineralogy
is? No, I didn't do that.
Okay. I'm sorry, I missed the bit of that. Did you look at metabolites?
No. No, because the ELISA would only work on the parent compound in the plant. And that's the only place where you get the control anyway.